Of course, I think it's wonderful to be caught up and swept away. And it's good to see that. I appreciate Mark a great deal as a person, as he leads our singing, because he leads it so earnestly and pours his heart into it. And we should respond in kind as he leads and as others lead us. And I appreciate very much the prayer that Don led us in. You know, the framing of a prayer with thoughtfulness and with meaning is not a small task. And I will just say he led in such a way that I was caught up in his petitions, and in my heart, those petitions were echoed. Grateful for what Dudley did in preparing us for the Lord's Supper. Remarkably fine job. We're all so blessed here. Is that not what we just sang? And on our worst day, we are blessed. I wanted to add a name to the ones who have been mentioned here. Our brother Tom Rose. Joan and Tom. Joan, before, has had her difficulties and challenges. But Tom's had some special challenges of late. He'll have surgery next month, if all goes well, on his leg. But difficulty. He wouldn't want all this sympathy, I'm sure, but he said, no. But I'm mentioning him because he means a lot to all of us, and we should remember him when we pray. Sometimes youth is thought of as something that we just throw away. It is that detour in life that one must endure, get through, get over it, and get on with things. Solomon says something that might suggest the same thing if taken out of context of the 11th chapter of Ecclesiastes. What he says there is that youth and the dawn of life is vanity. And his theme in Ecclesiastes has been on that very idea. Fleeting, empty. But Solomon is not saying that. Solomon is saying if you get fixed on youth, if the dawn of life becomes your idol, if you can't live without it, if the vitality and strength that is present in your youthful days is so important to you that nothing else matters, then that is emptiness. I want to speak about developing spirituality in young people this morning. And who will that include? That is the question. Who will that include? Well, I know this much, that when Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy 4, verse 12, he said, let no man despise your youth. And by that time, Timothy had to be pushing 40. It's in the 60s A.D., in the interim between Paul's first imprisonment in Rome and what we judge to be the second one, which is evident in 2 Timothy. So I'm taking a pretty broad range in here. And the text that was read before you in that grand sweeping song of praise of God's word, God's will, God's truth, God's judgments, God's statutes, God's ordinances. The question is asked, how can a young man cleanse his way? I believe that a great deal of Old Testament wisdom literature is addressed to young people. And why not? That's how it begins. And I want to tell you that it's no time to throw away. In fact, what Shakespeare said in that brief little couplet is true, and I won't give you the whole thing. The child is father to the man. If you're a young person in this audience here this morning, you are living a very vital part of your life. That is to say, if you've come to the point when within yourself you recognize the difference between what is right and what is wrong, and you understand that those standards come out of heaven, they're not arbitrary. Your mother and father didn't think them up. The Congress didn't get together and decide that's the case, but that something transcendent is here. And you've come, at least in the initial stage, to recognize that from that point onward. You're going to make choices that are going to influence you when you're 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. Choices have consequences. You cannot sow wild oats and expect the crop to fail. If there's one thing that in all of life never fails, it's the consequences of sowing to the flesh. Well, is it possible? I know people are rather cynical about the possibility of seeing spirituality in young people. In fact, they don't have much expectation of it. More is the pity. But look around you, all this intellectual arrogance that characterizes our times, what we know so much. We are so advanced technologically. We have all these grand ideas that we have developed. Look at the things that we have achieved and all that, and you can list them ad infinitum. And materialism. We live in a time that is so materialistic that it is extreme. We have done what somebody said about one of our local radio personalities. We've taken stupidity to the absolute ultimate and thrown it over the edge. I mean, that's what we've done with materialism. We've taken it to a ridiculous, pathetic extreme. Our love for things is just absolutely exorbitant. And I know that's in this world. And that's the very opposite of spirituality. I understand that. Pride. We have plenty of that. People that are selfish, who are driven only by what they want, what they need, what is pleasing and desirous to them now, right now. Drugs. Yes, they're everywhere. We seem not to be able to stem the flood of drugs in this country because we have so many stupid people. And I use that term with kindness because it is utter foolishness to get involved with these kind of addictive drugs that will take your life away. But they're there. Homosexuality not only is present, but it is heralded. Not only is present, but it is held up as a model of love and goodness and fineness, and then abortion is a part of it, too, in the world we live in. No concern for human life and divorce, the savaging of marriage. I know all that's true. So my question is, what's changed? Robert Turner used to say that they keep on saying that the world is going to the dogs, but the dogs must have had a little, mighty long way. But it just keeps on going. 1 John 5, verse 17 says that the whole world lies in the evil one, lies under the sway of the evil one. So what's new? That's been true a very long time. The ancient world in which our brethren, who many of whom were responsible by the Holy Spirit to write this great book, the world in which they lived was awesomely ungodly. It would make this one look like a pale substitute. They didn't just abort children, they killed them outright if they didn't want them. They didn't just commit divorce, they committed it repeatedly. Their loyalty to a marriage mate was non-existent in too many instances. Homosexuality was rife. And pagan idolatry was the word of the day. Can young people develop spirituality in a world like this? And the answer is absolutely. If you want to. You have the capacity. God has given it to you. Spirituality doesn't come with humanity. You don't get it automatically. But it's absolutely possible. With young people, somebody said. We have difficulty getting some older people to get their heads straight and to escape from the mindlessness of this materialism and worldliness. But that's not the right attitude, and it's not true. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, let no man despise your youth, suggests the possibility that youth is looked on with skepticism, and that's probably right. But he says to this young man, don't let anybody despise your youth. Be an example to the believers. You be a moral and spiritual example of goodness. And I charge all the young people here. Every last one of you who have said before this audience or somewhere else in some quiet place, Jesus Christ is Lord. And I commit my life to him absolutely from this point onward. All of you who, by virtue of the grace of God about which we have sung this morning, have lost the burden of guilt and turned out of the darkness into the light, I charge all of you with a task and responsibility of being spiritual individuals. I don't charge you with the task of turning aged overnight, of acting like you are 50 years old, because that's not exactly the idea. Solomon said you ought to enjoy your young life. You ought to rejoice in it. And I urge you to do it. I don't want you to start looking like I look. Not yet. I don't want you to walk like I walk or lack the energy that I lack. I don't want that for you. But I want to charge you with the responsibility to take up the task of being examples to the Christians around you and to those who will see your life. And you say, well, but I'm young, and I don't know a lot. I know that. But it's not a matter of what you don't know now. It's not a matter of what you haven't achieved now. It's a matter of what you have decided deep within your soul you're going to do. Yes, there's an expectation of empty-headed foolishness in young people. I know what this culture is like, and I know what some of your own brethren are like. Who look at you with some dismissive spirit. Well, I want to tell you something. The God you serve does not look at you that way. He has grand expectations. Will you have special challenges in your youth? Of course you will. You have all these pressures on you without the experience that is required to meet it and to handle it well. 2 Timothy 2:23, 2:22, the Apostle Paul charges Timothy to flee youthful lusts. Are there youthful lusts? Are there lusts that are most present and strong in youth? Yes, that's absolutely true. Sexual desire is strong. Experience is small. The desire for things can be strong because you haven't gotten all those things. And you look out and you long for those things. And you don't have the experience to know how little they will mean to you at last. How empty you'll be left if that's all you have. But flee. Run away. Get out of there from youthful lust. But though there are pressures upon young people that are unique in some way to them, nonetheless, there is absolute expectation from God that they be spiritual. So don't listen to those people who say about you, well, what can you expect? I tell you, the expectations of God are high. In fact, God expects everybody to be spiritual. He equipped us for the task. Romans 8, verse 6 says, the mind of the Spirit is life and peace. What is the mind of the flesh? Death. And he's called us to life and to peace. The spiritual mind is the mind that lives. Galatians 6, verse 8. If you sow to the flesh, you will of the flesh reap corruption. You sow to the Spirit, you shall of the Spirit reap eternal life. God is not mocked. This is the way it is. And so, what you are doing now in these years of youth, and I will tell you from experience, it is true. What you are doing now, the choices you are making now in these days of youth, will live with you in your adult life. And they will challenge you from now on. And there will be consequences that will come that will be most unpleasant. And you do not escape them simply because, I'm sorry, I was young then. I really didn't know what I was doing. Yes, but you made a choice. And those choices have consequences. And those of us who are older try to help you. Your parents try to help you. But you need to help yourself. Because it's your life. Proverbs chapter 2. I say that God addresses young people, and I believe that's so. I think Proverbs, as I said, the wisdom literature as a whole, in large measure, is addressed to young people. Trying to get our attention when we're young. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. That's what God expects from young people. That we seek for wisdom as for hidden treasure. That we long for this silver, that we reach up for it. It is not any good if we sit in our lives and say, well, I'm waiting for it to drop in my lap. I'm sure any moment now, wisdom will suddenly descend upon me, and I will just know everything I need to know. Not unless you choose to know it. And you will have to choose to know wise things and the wisdom of God in a world that rattles with all kinds of nonsense. And you'll have to choose it in a world that looks upon choosing the wisdom of God as rather foolish. You are missing out on things now. What about all the fun you can have now? What about all the wonderful things you can do now? Because you're losing that. Yes, we're losing it. And if it weren't for what we were gaining, we might feel bad about it. Search for wisdom. Make that your aim, to be wise. And Proverbs defines that kind of wisdom and says in chapter 1 that the fear of the Lord, verse 7, is the beginning of knowledge. So the first thing you can do as a young person, and you have done that if you have committed yourself to Christ, is to fear and reverence God. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, I've already alluded to this. I believe in Ecclesiastes, Solomon's addressing young people to help them down life's road and to help them escape all the stupidity of his life. Verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. I believe that's all right. I mean, it's young people. I remember. There was a delight to being young. Burden too, but there was a delight about it. And he says, rejoice in it. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. And the years draw near when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. So, don't build your life on being young and doing the things that you could do if you're young, because that will not continue. But chapter 12 says, remember now you're created in the days of your youth before the difficult days come, and the days draw near when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Remember your Creator. That's sort of elemental, isn't it? That the creature should remember his Creator. To look over the edge of the universe and see out there beyond the heavens of heavens that there is someone present who has created all this. And who has a dream in it and a purpose in it, and you are a part of that. And that knowing him and reverencing him and loving him is what life is about. And that's exactly what Solomon says as he closes this book in verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Be sober. It's all right to be joyful. and to enjoy those things that are possible when you are young. But it's very necessary amidst all that that you be sober. And remember what the whole duty of man is. And somebody says, is that all? Yes, that's the whole of it. You're not going to remember when you end this life all the great things you did, the places you went, the automobiles you bought, and the cars you and the houses you lived. You're not going to remember all that. You're going to have one concern. You come to stand before the great magistrate of the universe, and that is, did I love God, and did I keep His commandments? So that is the thing you need to do even now. Psalm 119:9, we've already noted that God addressing young people. And young people are addressed in the New Testament, in the epistles, as children. These are children who are Christians now, Ephesians 6:1-3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. That is exactly the message of Proverbs. That you need to listen to the law of your father and submit to the law of your mother. I know this can be a challenge, young people. I've seen it from both sides. And as I have noted, someone here asked my mother in my presence which of her sons had been the most difficult to raise, and she mentioned my name quickly. I was on that side. I was not an easy son. I had a stubborn streak in me that had to be broken. And my mother broke it. Because I wasn't breaking her. And you must appreciate that what being said to you by your parents, cautions that they're uttering, are all words of love and grace, because they want you to have a life that's real and true. And they don't want you jumping off some cliff somewhere and finding yourself deeply spiritually injured, morally injured as a consequence of it. So trust your parents. They are not infallible. They are not perfect. But they do love you and they have some wisdom. And you need to listen to that if you want to be the kind of spiritual individual that God wants you to be. That is His counsel. Colossians 3:20 speaks about the same thing. That we're to obey our parents in everything. But now some of the young people in this audience are not there still. What I want you to understand is, though, that the Lord is speaking to you. Fear challenge is a choice. It comes with the awakening of the will, with the awareness of right and wrong. We must choose to serve God and eternal spiritual truths, or we'll serve ourselves and this swiftly passing world of the flesh. Which do you want? Satan wants you to forget this world is passing away. Satan wants you to forget this thing is rusting away. Satan wants you to forget that thieves break through and steal. Just forget all about that. You mustn't forget about that. That's what's going to happen to all this. It will happen to your youth. It will happen to all these things. And you're going to be separated from all this material universe one day. And then what will you have if you build your life upon that? That is foolishness, isn't it? So it's choose God and spiritual things. Or choose yourself and the world, which is passing away, and is vanity, which is Solomon's message all the way through Ecclesiastes. Everything here is vanity and chasing after the wind. So, spirituality is a choice to serve God above all else, and that's what you chose to do when you confessed Jesus. Now, I want to say, first of all, it doesn't demand perfection. We're all grateful for that. God is merciful and gracious. 1 John 2:1 said, I'm writing these things to you that you should not sin. But if any man sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. The purpose of God's message to us is to keep us away from transgression and sin because it's bad for us. You say, well, it's just bad for him. No, it's bad for us. And that's the reason he's saying don't do it. It is destructive. And we need to view the will of God in just that way, but He doesn't demand perfection from us. But I tell you what He does demand: a true heart, A heart that says, that's what I want to do. That's my aim. That is my desire, that I might please God. I've got it in my heart and in my mind to do just exactly that. It doesn't eliminate temptation. 1 Corinthians 10, 12 to 13 begins by saying, you that think you stand, take heed lest you fall. There's that possibility out there. But with every temptation, Paul says, God gives a way of escape that you may be able to endure it. And so the strength to endure and to do what is right in the midst of a temptation, in the midst of a trial that comes upon you, is a part of learning to be spiritual. What we have done is not give up all the pleasant things. I mean, I know people think that becoming a Christian just sucks all the life out of life. I am impressed again and again with the statement made in the 16th Psalm, which is a prophecy, actually, of the resurrection of Jesus, and it's cited by Peter on the day of Pentecost. You know how this psalm ends? Verse 11. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. That's what you get when you become a Christian. The joy of a cleansed conscience. The delight in knowing that your Father looks down upon you with approval. The confidence that everything that happens to you here at last is going to work out for your salvation and redemption. That nothing can change that. And the victorious words of the 8th chapter of Romans are meaningful here. Who shall separate us from the love of God? And he goes through that long list of things, and he said, nothing can do it. The certitude that everything that transpires will be worked together for our good by God, Romans 8, verse 28. And what we actually do is we give up some things to get greater things. We all know about that. Young people know about that. You can't run the marathon eating all that fat food and running 3 or 4 blocks every day. Now, that might be somebody's ridiculous dream, but you know you can't do that. You have to give up a lot to do that. All great athletes give up a great deal to achieve what they achieve. And we understand the nature of sacrifice. I'm giving up this, which I want now, because I got something out there that I want far more and is far more important to me. And so what we do as Christians, we're giving up this, which I might want now. But I'm giving that up so that I can have that that's outside that's very far more important. And that is the great joy of being right with God and having no fear in this life and no fear of death, etc. Philippians 3, verse 8, the Apostle Paul says, I've given up all things and count them but garbage that I might gain Christ. And that's what is meant by the choice to serve God above everything and to be the spiritual individual that we're expected to be. Many young people have chosen to be spiritual. You've seen all this before. I go through these things because I want to remind you of these truths. Joseph had a dream. In the 39th chapter of Genesis, verse 9, when the wife of Potiphar tried to induce him into her bed, he said, how can I do this great evil and sin against God? That's a young man. I don't know how much past 17 he was. He was 17 when he was sold into slavery. Can young people be spiritual? Not only can they be, God expects them to be. Was this a great hero out there in this great trouble? Well, he sets an example for us. But he did exactly what he should have done, didn't he? In spite of the circumstances, in spite of the awful tragedy of his brother's hatred, in spite of the suspicion on his part, unknowingly, that his father didn't love him anymore, he made the right choice. He did what was right. And I want to say to young people in this audience that we don't always have parents that are godly. And people don't always treat us like we ought to be treated. But it doesn't matter one whit about the choices we need to make in life. We need to do right. And an excuse won't help. Joseph could have said, well, man, I'm in bad circumstances down here. And the joy has gone out of life. My brothers all hate me. I've been sold as a slave. This is terrible. And I ought to have a little fun. I should have a little fun. And so what if I get in bed with my master's wife? None of those excuses count one bit, and we use them often, don't we? Do the will of God, that's the whole of man. Moses, Hebrews 11, verse 24. Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing to suffer affliction with the people of God. And why in the world would he do something like that? He had it made. He was in a position, really, to enjoy life in a wonderful way. But he made a choice that a lot of people today find strange and incomprehensible. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. For he looked to the reward. And what was that reward? Mentioned already in this book, a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He looked at the reward that God would give, which was so far surpassed anything that you might find or experience here, that they will fade from your memory once that's experienced. So Moses made a choice. Daniel had conviction. He determined he was not going to eat the king's food because it was contrary to the will of God. And then he chose company that would encourage him. He associated with young men who were devout and earnest. And 12, he had confidence in God because he said to the man who was his supervisor, you feed us vegetables and see if when this is over, if you just let this test be made, that we're not better off than all the rest of these young men. And he put his hands in the hands of God then. Put his life in the hands of God. And that was a young man. And he could have complained and made excuses too because he had been carried away as a captive by some foreign army, away from his family, away from everybody that loved him, and taken to a difficult place and put in a difficult situation where if you didn't go along, you might not get along. And his answer to that was, I'm going to do the will of God no matter what. That's my decision. Spirituality is a matter of choice. And then Mary, the young peasant girl, who was chosen strangely out of the city of Nazareth to bear in human flesh the Son of God, the Messiah of the world. And when the angel said she was going to be pregnant, and she knew she had never known a man, and she could understand very well what was going to happen so far as her situation was concerned, if that happened, because she was going to be looked upon as scandalous. She was going to be rejected in the society where she lived. It was a very conservative little village, Nazareth, about 300 people perhaps at that time. Everybody would know. And she said, behold, the handmaid of the Lord. As you have said to me, so let it be. That's spirituality. And someone very young. Life just beginning. And she could have said, look, I've got, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I had dreams here with Joseph. And all those dreams are going to be shattered here. Young people can be spiritual. First of all, they need spiritual parents if they have godly parents. And they ought to have godly parents if the parents are Christians who love God. Because those parents are told to love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to teach the same thing to their children. Great emphasis placed upon that in Deuteronomy 6. Parents who love their children selflessly, that is to say, they don't look on their children as their property. Those who are going to enlarge them, those who are going to be a blessing to them. They don't try to use them. They are not your property, parents. They're the property of God, and if they are Christians, they belong to the Lord absolutely, and you need to do what John the Baptist did with his disciples. You need to take them to Jesus and turn them over to him. Your children need to be turned over to the Lord. You need to train them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord as parents are urged, as fathers are urged in Ephesians 6, verse 4. And that means you do it selflessly. You're not doing what you're doing it for your convenience. You're not doing what you're doing in order to gain the acceptance of your children, because your children are not always going to accept what you say as absolutely so. And so you must plead with them on the basis of the kind of life you've lived and the honor that they have seen in you, that they do what you say and trust you. And they need that kind of nurture. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, Paul reminds Timothy that he had known the Holy Scriptures since he was a young person. He learned it at the knee of his mother and grandmother. But he said in one more passage in chapter 1, verse 5 in the same book, that he saw in him the same faith that had been in his mother and his grandmother. But I'll tell you whose faith it was. It was Timothy's faith. Spiritual parents produce faith in their children. But it's not a faith of conformity. It is not a faith of some ritual that they repeat. It's a faith that has gone deep inside of them, and they're as convicted as their parents that it is true that Jesus Christ is Lord, and they're going to live their lives on his behalf. As I said, some young people don't have that privilege, and they must make a choice sometimes against their parents and contrary to their family. But spiritual young people have to have a faith of their own. Do you have a faith of your own? Would you go on doing what you're doing if your parents were not around? If you moved to a new city, a strange place, would you go on doing what you're doing? Would you be faithful to the Lord because you have made your commitment to him? And it was not a commitment made to your parents. It was not a commitment made because of your parents. It was a commitment made to Christ because he's who he is. And you are determined to love God above everything. Can young people be spiritual? Yes. Does God expect it? Yes. Are there consequences to decisions made in youth? Yes. Will God hold young people accountable for their transgressions and their rejections of his will? Yes. Is this a sobering matter? Yes. So, thank you for listening. Now, I want to speak to young people in this assembly who have not become Christians. I'm just wondering to myself, what other direction do you think is going to be such a blessing to you here and hereafter that you think, I can't be a Christian? You say, and you say, well, if you say to me, and I've had young people say this to me, but this is a serious step. Yes, sorry. You say, this is a serious step, and I'm going to have to think about it carefully. Well, you do need to think about it carefully, because it is a mighty kind of commitment you make when you become a Christian. There is no greater one that you can make in life, because you turn yourself over to the Lord and his will. But I want to ask you, if you don't follow him, tell me, what is there out there as an alternative? What are you going to find to fill that eternal soul that's inside you? What are you going to find? That lasts how long? Forever. Because that's how long you look like. What have you got out there as an alternative? And if you have to say that's no alternative at all, this world is dying. I know that. That's no alternative. I know I will die. That's no alternative. However much I may fear, however much I may even dread some of the things that are going to come upon me because I say I want to follow Christ, I will follow Christ because that is the only way to go. Is it not? It's sort of simple. And I will repeat what I've said before, that the Lord will be with you all the way. You make your stand, and don't be worried about tomorrow. You make your stand and keep faith with it today, and the Lord will take care of tomorrow and all the tomorrows, because he's the one who died to make you what he's calling you to be. And we also call today that you would come confessing openly and unashamedly that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and in that confession, be saying with absolute sincerity, I am going to do his will the rest of my life. And then, let the old man be buried. Yes, it's a fluid grave, but it's the one that the Lord's around. Let the old man be buried, so that the new man can arise.
forgiven and cleansed, renewed in heart and mind on the road to heaven. It can't get better than that. And so we entreat you. And Christians, if you haven't been serious, a silly Christian is not a very good Christian. One doesn't think, this old wands through. I appeal to you to turn in your heart and be what you promised to be when first you came to the Lord. And we're going to sing this invitation hymn with the expectation and the hope and the prayer that someone will respond. While we stand, respond.